Shout out to everyone who supports me on the regular so I don't have to do mattress ads and subject all of you to mattress ad hell realms. If you want to keep me out of hell realms, consider becoming a patron of my work. My books are currently open, so consider booking an astrological service with me. Sign up for my newsletter and get all the details about cool new offerings like my pre-recorded audio lectures, astrological poems, or even just tarot readings. In June, I'll be offering meditation classes as well. Super pumped about that. Get yourself over to my website and check it all out if you're interested in working with me in any capacity. I'd be absolutely thrilled to meet with you. My patrons get unlimited meditation sessions. My meditation teacher training is finishing up in June, so that's an offering I'm really excited to give to everyone, to give to the world. So my patrons get unlimited meditation sessions with me, as well as monthly mini horoscopes for the new and full moon. They get discounts on services and readings, access to the Discord, and honestly, all my love and adoration. They get it all. So become a patron, join the Discord. I would love to see you there. Today's episode is going to be taking the basics of aspects and expanding on them. At some point, we get comfortable with the five major aspects, and then we're seeing them in our charts, we're interpreting them, we're working with them confidently, and then at some point we start to notice patterns. These patterns are astrological geometric shapes known as aspect patterns. Pretty simple, aspect patterns. Before we get too far into aspect patterns, I do want to mention that I have an Aspects 101 audio lecture on my website. It lays out the five major aspects, how to work with them. It even has review questions and class materials that come with it. So if you're needing or wanting some more information on the major aspects and you just want to study them a little more, just feel free to check out that lecture. It's on my website. Aspect patterns require us to have a solid grasp on aspects as a whole, because to easily recognize aspect patterns, it's not just about the colored lines on the screen. It's about the actual aspects required to create the pattern. Aspects are the degree-based relationships between planets or placements in a chart, and when we have certain combinations, it creates these really eye-catching shapes and patterns within the chart. These shapes and patterns can be really interesting and important to understanding the overall energy or fate of the chart. So just to define it, an aspect pattern is the arrangement of several planets in a chart that are connected through aspects to form a specific pattern or formation. The reason these patterns can be of value to our astrological interpretations is because they can speak to an overarching pattern, theme, or energy that just kind of pervades throughout the chart. It can be a focal point, it can indicate how energy manifests, and it can even show the areas of the native's life that will be most prominent or will have the most energy swirling around it. When we interpret aspect patterns, we're looking at a few main things. We're looking at the planets involved, the houses, the signs, and any type of pattern we're working with in general. The aspects that create the pattern will also create the natural energy of the pattern. And then we layer in things like sign, house, and planets to get further meaning. And we'll go over this more when we get into the patterns themselves. So don't worry if it feels a little confusing right now and I just keep saying the words aspect and pattern and aspect. We're going to flush all this out a little more in a minute. Before we get into aspect patterns themselves, we need to talk about the parameters for what creates an aspect pattern. And this is going to vary from astrologer to astrologer, from practice to practice. But the important thing is that you stick to your parameters and you're just going to stick with them. You're going to pick them and stick them. That's it. We can't change up our parameters based on whether we want something to be true in our charts or not. We need to find the parameters that work and that resonate with us and then apply them whenever we interpret charts, whether it be ours or someone else's. And when I say parameters, I'm really talking about two things here. Since you should and probably are already familiar with aspects, you're going to be familiar with the concept of orbs. Orbs are just the amount of degrees you adhere to when looking at aspects. I tend to stick to an orb of about 5 to 6 degrees when working with charts because I really, really like those strong planetary conversations. Other people use wider orbs, and that's totally cool too. I know some people have a really wide orb for the luminaries and then tighter orbs for other things. It doesn't matter what you choose, just be consistent with it. You can't change your orbs simply because you want something to be true or not in your chart. You can't just be like, oh yeah, I want Venus and Jupiter to be in a sextile, so I'm going to widen my orb a little bit. Or I don't want Venus and Saturn to be in a sextile, so I'm going to close the orb so I shut Saturn out. You can't do that. That's why it's important to stick to your orbs, pick them and stick them. The second parameter, and more likely the more, I don't want to say controversial, but the more hotly debated one, is what planets are involved in the aspect patterns. Now, again, there's no right answer to this. I've come across a lot of information and a lot of varying opinions. One thing I have seen that's the same across the board is that placements like the ascendant and the midheaven are not taken into consideration here. People get really divided over whether or not asteroids or minor-bodied planets should be used, but most everyone agrees that mathematical points like the ascendant, the midheaven, and the lots are not included in aspect patterns. Some people will include asteroids like Chiron, and then others won't include them at all. It's all personal practice and preference, and when it comes to what planets and planetary bodies that you include, the main thing is, again, to be consistent. If you don't typically include Chiron in your aspect patterns, but then realize you'll have a grand cross if you start adding it in, that's not really a reason to use asteroids in this method. As you may have guessed, I'm pretty strict about this. My Saturn in Capricorn likes hard and fast rules, so I'm pretty strict about my orbs and my aspect patterns. Aspect patterns aren't something that everyone has, and that's okay. They don't make you more special or less special depending on whether you have one or not. It's just another layer to the chart and ultimately the person's fate. Since I'm a Hellenistic astrologer, I don't even use the generational planets in my aspect patterns. I use the 7 traditional planets with an orb of about 6, and that's it. So in my world, it's not as common to see these patterns. So when they do come up, it's actually really special and fun because I'm not including every planet, and I do use tidal orbs. So it's like a treat when I see them. I also know that the aspect pattern is going to be really influential in the person's life because I do have such strict parameters for them. The energy of the aspects themselves will be strong, and the planets involved are going to be the 7 traditional planets, which are the ones that have the most impact and sway on our lives. So based on my parameters, I know if I see an aspect pattern, I'm like, oh man, this is big. This is actually something that's really big in this person's life because it's so strong, because it got through all my parameters. So if I'm seeing it, I know it's big. I think the majority of people do include the generational planets, Neptune, Uranus, and Pluto. But since I'm in the Hellenistic world, I just personally don't. So if you get a reading from me and you want me to talk about an aspect pattern that has Pluto in it, I probably won't have a whole lot to say, but that doesn't mean it's not valid. It's just not my personal and professional criteria for aspect patterns. So before you go getting in too deep with aspect patterns, I strongly encourage 2 things. Get comfortable with aspects in general. The reason we have these patterns is because they're comprised of actual aspects like trine, square, sextiles, etc. Knowing the energy and basics of aspects will set us up to understand the energy of the pattern. Be comfortable and set in your parameters. Don't base your parameters off what you want your own chart to say either. Do it based on good astrological practices and what makes sense for you. And then again, pick it and stick it. There are lots of aspect patterns, but I'm going to be going over the ones that I most commonly see and the ones that I get the most inquiries about, the most questions about. I'm going to briefly touch on each one. I'll talk about the aspects required to create the pattern and then speak to the energy of the pattern in very broad terms. The reason I'm not going in depth here is because things like house placement, sign, dignity, joy, and the planets involved are going to drastically change the energy and outcome of the aspect pattern. It would be damn near impossible to speak to every combination, so I'm just giving very general information about what the pattern means or how it can manifest. If you want more information about it, you can try to further interpret it yourself or find a trusted astrologer to book a consultation with. And again, my books are open. Today, we're going to be covering T-squares, clusters, stelliums, a grand cross, kites, grand trines, and yods. Before we get started, I just want to say that it might be helpful to look up pictures if you're able to while following along with these. I find that even, you know, when I'm working with them, having that visual is really nice, especially when you first start. And then also just remember that I use whole sign houses for my interpretations. Let's start with T-squares. A T-square is two planets opposing each other, and then those two planets are also squaring the same planet. So here we have all dynamic energy, an opposition and two squares both pointed at the same planet. The planet that's being squared is the pinnacle, the peak, or the focal point in the aspect pattern. There's a lot of friction or tension in the houses involved, which manifests in the native's life and life events. The squared focal point can often act as an outlet for the planets in opposition. So think of it as the opposition is two people butting heads, and then the squared planet is the referee. It's getting the story from both sides of the opposition, and it's usually how the opposition then comes to resolve itself. Whenever there's a transit over any of the three planets involved in the T-square, we can see extra tensions arise, or the houses involved in the T-square will become a lot more active. And this can cause those areas of the native's life to have a lot of movement, tension, or just be more dynamic in nature in general. All planets in the T-square will share modality, so it's good to take note of the modality and see if that's an energy that you have trouble relating to or need to really work with in order to harness it properly. T-squares are something that we're working with continually throughout our lives because they're so active and dynamic in nature. I don't think it's something that you're just like, yep, I cracked the code. I know how to solve my T-square. No, this is something that will continually bring obstacles, but will also continually bring opportunities. The obstacles brought on by the opposition can bear fruit, but only if we understand and utilize the outlet of the focal point of the square. The square really provides that focal point. We can work with the opposition, but we have to understand the squared focal point in order to see the tension be resolved. Stelliums. Stelliums are three or more planets in the same house. I know some people use four or more, but since I'm already only using the seven traditional planets, I use three for a stellium. I think this is an aspect pattern people are super familiar with, and one that might be even considered the gateway into aspect patterns. It's pretty common because of how the Sun, Mercury, and Venus all travel relatively close together. Mercury cannot be more than one sign away from the Sun, and Venus cannot be more than two signs away from the Sun. So the fact that they just kind of travel closely, I think we see a lot of stelliums that are comprised of Sun, Mercury, and Venus. And that's my own stellium, Sagittarius, Sun, Mercury, and Venus. The sign and house placement are super important to understanding the stellium because it's an increased amount of energy of the sign, but also an increased amount of energy from the ruler of the sign. So while, yes, I have a Sagittarius stellium, it's also a Jupiter-ruled stellium. So it's almost like a Jupiter stellium. And fun fact, the only real astrological tattoo I have is like a pretty decently sized glyph of Jupiter on my leg. So anyway, this energy will manifest in the area of the native's life that the house placement presides over. And that house in general can be an area that's more important or emphasized in the native's life. So my stellium is in the third house. And look at me, I'm a podcaster. That's what I do. I do things with routine frequency, especially media and communication. My stellium is sort of playing out in a very third housey type way and a very Jupiter expansion way. And then if you want to look at also, look at where the ruler of your stellium is in the chart, because that's also going to be important. The ruler of my stellium is in the 11th house. So right there, connecting through media and communication with large bodies of people in a routine way. I think we all know how that one played out. Clusters. Similar to a stellium, we have what's known as a cluster or a stellia, which stellia is a cute word, and it's just the plural of stellium. This is when we have three or more planets in two different houses. So it's basically like you have more than one stellium in the chart. Using my parameters that I mentioned to you guys, this is pretty rare and cool to see. I'm only working with seven planets, the seven traditional planets for aspect patterns. It also takes three of them to make a stellium. So then seeing a stellia, having two stelliums would be super cool because that's just such concentrated energy in the chart. Since the stellium will be in two different houses, it's going to be those two areas of the native's life that are the major focal points. Those areas are going to be so important to the incarnation and what the person does with their life, and also what they're meant to experience and learn. Sign, dignity, decan, bounds, all those extra mitigating factors need to be assessed to get the most out of a stellia or a cluster, because it's such a concentration of energy. You're taking, again, by my parameters, there's only seven planets we're working with. You're taking at least six of them and putting them in two different houses. That's a giant concentration of energy, very specifically in two areas of our lives. So we need to look at all the minute details of those planets and what they're really saying, and just the totality of the energy, to get a clear picture of why there's so much emphasis placed on those areas in this person's lifetime. And again, you're going to want to take the ruler of the stellias as well. So let's say I had a Sagittarius stellium, but then I also had an Aries stellium. Wouldn't that be great? So I would be both Jupiter and Mars. Those are the two planets you'd look at. You'd look at them, where they're at in the chart, what they're doing, what they got going on, and you would further interpret your cluster or your stellia that way. Next, we have the Grand Cross. This is a big one. I think this is the one that people, one of the ones, there's a few, but this is one of the ones that people really focus on. There are four planets in total for this pattern. Two planets are in opposition, and then those planets are squaring another set of planets in an opposition, and this creates a square with a cross in the middle. It's literally a square, and then there's just a cross in the middle. It's basically two T-squares put together. And just like the T-square, the planets are all in the same modality. This means you can have a mutable Grand Cross, a cardinal Grand Cross, or a fixed Grand Cross. And the modality is going to be super important to the native's life and will heavily impact the way the Grand Cross manifests as a whole. This aspect pattern speaks to tensions and difficulties within the native's personality and their life experiences. And while we all have tensions and difficulties because that's the human experience, the Grand Cross makes them a focal point for the person's life and overall life purpose. The oppositions create a lot of duality and opposing thoughts, actions, or emotions depending on element. And the squares are going to be sort of relief points for those tensions, even though they're dynamic in nature as well. It's just like with the T-square, it's kind of like where we can relieve tension a little bit. Even just looking at the shape of the Grand Cross, we can see how the oppositions and the squares sort of feed into and play off of one another. It's energy that's constantly in motion, constantly creating friction, and it needs addressed through the chosen modality. So fixed Grand Crosses are super stable, but they can become stuck and stagnant. So they need to work with that stagnant energy and making sure they don't become too stubborn or stuck in their ways. And then cardinal Grand Crosses, tons of ambition, tons of drive, but not a lot of desire to see something through to the end. These are the people that are the go-getters and the party starters, and they really want to go, 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 but they kind of peter out towards the end. And then mutable Grand Crosses are flexible. They're curious. They're wanting to learn about a bunch of things, but they can become aimless and not have a lot of direction. It's like they dig a lot of holes, but they're all shallow. So the heightened emphasis on the modality can be both a gift and a curse for people with this aspect pattern. Next, we have grand trines. These are three planets that are engaging in trines that are all connected. These will always be in the same element. Grand trines are the first aspect pattern we're talking about that's not dynamic in nature. It's comprised of all trines, so it's super harmonic. People with grand trines have a natural gift or vitality in the houses and element that the grand trine resides in. The catch is that people with this aspect pattern can be lazy or unaware of the gift. It's a trine, so it's goodness. It's something that can be easily overlooked or taken for granted because it's a good thing. We only tend to put a lot of emphasis on you know, hard things, on dynamic things. As humans, we're like, oh, that stresses me out. I don't like that. I'm going to fixate on that. Whereas when we have something good in front of us, like this grand trine, it's something that we can take for granted, or again, just not have a lot of motivation to suss out because it's already good. Why fix it? Why explore it? So if you have a grand trine, please be super mindful of it. What energy is it giving that you might just be taking for granted? Are there gifts in this area of your life that you're squandering or not noticing? Use your grand trines to become aware of your innate talents and also the areas of your life that just naturally beam with goodness. And one of the best things you can do with your grand trine is show it gratitude. Find it, show it gratitude, and be like, you know what? That is a blessing, and I'm going to use it for goodness in the world. You'll want to take note of the planets involved in the grand trine, the house placement, and the rulers of those houses to get the clearest picture. The element the grand trine is under is also going to be of great importance and will let us know what energy kind of naturally swirls around the native. Our next aspect pattern is another big one. It's kites. These are four planets in total. Now, a kite is a grand trine, a planet opposite one of the grand trine planets, and that planet in the opposition also forms sextiles that create the top of the kite. And this is where I say it is good to have that visual, because what I just said can just sound like a bunch of words. So definitely look it up and you'll be like, oh yes, I do see the opposing planet in the grand trine that then makes the sextiles. I see it there. So here we have a mix of both dynamic and harmonic aspects, but mostly harmonic. We're getting all that goodness of the grand trine, but then we're throwing that fourth planet in that brings in tension and opposition, but also a little extra goodness because there's sextiles that it creates as well. That fourth planet really wakes up the energy of the grand trine. It's often described as the focal point or emphasis for the grand trine's energy. It's a dedicated space for the grand trine to bring its energy to a culmination point. The kite takes the energy of the grand trine and says, I am not going to let this slip by, and really takes hold of all the goodness that the grand trine has to offer. This aspect really showcases how dynamic aspects are required to make the most of our harmonic aspects. Just a little bit of tension, just a little bit of dynamic energy with that opposition, and now we have an aspect pattern that has drive, ambition, and the motivation to maximize potential. If you have a kite, really look at the opposing planet and know that it's a focal point. It's agitating the trine, but in a good way. So please don't see that opposing planet in your kite as the enemy. It's actually the key. This is like the obstacle is the way. That opposing planet in the kite is truly the key to maximizing, harmonizing, uniting. It's honestly such an important part of the kite, and don't think of it as the bad guy because it's the dynamic aspect. It's actually what's waking you up and allowing you to see and utilize all of the goodness that you have in your life, and also help you create even more goodness in your life. Our last aspect pattern today is yods. There are three planets involved in a yod: a single sextile, and then the sextile planets are both quincunce, the same planet. Now, quincunce is actually a minor aspect. It's 150 degrees. And I gotta tell you, I absolutely love them. The reason I included yods in this episode is because people seem to be interested in them and because I use quincunces in my own practice. Yods have the nickname the finger of God, which I find really funny. But it can also give this inflated sense of importance to this aspect pattern. So to understand what it's really pointing to, what the finger of God is really pointing to, we have to understand the energy of the aspects involved. So let's go over them. Sextiles. We know those guys. They're a harmonic aspect, and they show a level of cooperation and unity. But who are the quincunces? Quincunces are our blind spots. They're an area of our life that we don't pay attention to, or we don't really understand what's even going on there. We aren't ignoring it. We aren't flat out like, I'm not going to pay attention to that. It's just, we don't understand it. We know it exists, but we don't often see it. We don't understand it. So we don't even really take it into account. We constantly have to adjust our lens of understanding to integrate the information from a quincunx. That's the biggest thing I tell my clients in readings when we're looking at quincunx energy. I'm like, this is a blind spot. You're going to have to constantly remind yourself of that energy and be like, oh yeah, that is something that bothers me. Oh yes, that is something I do. Oh yes, that was something that affected me in this way. And now I act in this way because of it. You're constantly reminding yourself, that's my blind spot. And you just have to adjust and integrate when it comes to quincunxes. So the sextile portion of the yod is the base and the quincunx is the focal point. It's like it's funny that it's the focal point because it's something we don't see. It's a focal point we don't see. There are three modalities and three elements involved. Oftentimes, the missing element can be what activates or holds a mirror up to the secrets of the quincunx, and that's how we see it. That's how we learn to recognize it. So when a transiting planet hits an opposition with the quincunx planet of the yod, that's when the yod's energy will show itself more, when it'll come to life, and then when the blind spot will be illuminated. So if you have a yod, look at the sign that's between the sextiled planets. That's going to be when there's transits going through that sign. That's when it's going to hit an opposition with the quincunx planet in the yod. And that's going to be a time when, okay, stuff's going to go on with this yod. Things are going to be revealed to me and I'm going to learn how to work with that blind spot more. I think that's enough aspect patterns for one day. If you were listening along without visuals, I definitely suggest going back and listening again with some pictures or references for the patterns. The astrology dictionary, like if you Google like theastrologydictionary.com, it's a great resource for those visuals. I think they're clean, they're simple, they're really good to look at. But honestly, you can type in the name of the pattern and Google's going to pop up with a million and one images for it. So just pick one that you like. I hope this helped to flush out some of the most popular aspect patterns, what they mean, and how to investigate them a little further in your own chart. Dignity, joy, house placement, and all those mitigating factors are absolutely going to play a part in how the pattern shows up in someone's life. Because people can have the same pattern, but have very different experiences with it. These are patterns, but we all wear them differently. And if you have a pattern that I didn't mention today, all you have to do now that you know the formula is just go to it and be like, okay, what aspects is this pattern comprised of? What is it made of? And then you can know the energy that's infused into it and you can start piecing it out and working with it. And again, if you still find that difficult, come see me, go see your other favorite astrologer. I'm sure they would love to work with you on it. If you don't have any natal aspect patterns, it's literally not a big deal. And if you have them all, it's still not a big deal. These are tools for information, not for making ourselves feel special or building up our astrological egos. It doesn't matter if we have them, and it doesn't matter if we don't have them. We do have them, don't have them, doesn't matter. What matters is the proper interpretation and integration of the information they provide. So if you do have any of these patterns or others, make sure you're interpreting them properly, giving it the attention it requires, and getting to learn the aspect pattern on a fundamental level of elements, signs, modalities, and the actual aspects that build the pattern. If you want more astrological content before the next episode, consider signing up to become a patron of my work. I've got exclusive blog content, monthly lunar miniscopes with tarot advice, retrograde guides, and a Discord waiting for you to join. You could also leave a super cute review on Spotify or iTunes, which I would be eternally grateful for. Head on over to my website, check it all out, and thank you in advance for supporting me. Until next time, later days.